Hello, good evening. How are we doing? We good? Oh, thanks, Matt. We're good. So, hi, I'm Sam, and we are in part three, our final week of our series, Trusted. And we are looking at this idea, a pretty radical idea, that God trusts us, that we believe in God, but also he believes in us, that we trust in God, but also he trusts us. And to look at this idea, we've been going through the parable that we know as the parable of the talents. It's a story that Jesus told his disciples just before he was about to be killed. And it's about this man, this wealthy man that is going off on a journey. And so he gathers up his wealth and he goes to three of his servants and says, I'm going to give you a huge stack of money while I'm away. I need you to look after it. And he gives one servant five talents. He gives the second servant two talents and the last servant one talent. And now we know that these talents are kind of a weight of gold. It's a huge amount of money. In today's money, it might look something like one talent being £1 million, two talents being £2 million, and five talents being £5 million. That is a lot of cash that they have been trusted with. And so the first two, they kill it. They're amazing. They go out, they take risks, they invest the money, and then it comes back. When the master returns, they've doubled what he's given them. And the master is absolutely buzzing. The master is delighted. He says, you good and faithful servants. But then the last servant, the servant that Philip calls the loser servant, he is, for some reason, scared, fearful, worried, maybe just comfortable, and decides that he's going to take the treasure he's been given and bury it underground. Now, that's not an unusual thing to do. Back in those days, there weren't banks like we have today in the same way. And so it was pretty normal to bury your treasure underground. That was just a run-of-the-day thing to do. But that wasn't what the master was after. The master had given these servants a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to do something remarkable, something way more than they could imagine. And the servant just chose to play it safe. And so we're faced, when we look at this story, there's sort of one statement that we can take that comes out of it and one question that really we have to ask ourselves. And the positive statement comes from the first two servants that doubled their money. Because when the servant comes back, when the master comes back, the servants shout out, you trusted me. They're so amazed that the master would give them this money, that he would trust them with so much. And so they shout, you trusted me. And we can do the same with God. That we can look at the things in our lives that God has trusted us with, the people that are around, the good things he's given us, the good news of Jesus, and say, wow, you trusted me. But the third servant, he poses us a little bit of a challenge, because we, when we read his story, have to ask the question, what stops us from doing great things for God? What is it that stops the servant from doing all that he could do with the money? What is it that means that he buries it underground? And we learned in the last 2 weeks, actually, one of the main things is that the servant, and so often we, are stuck in the comfort zone. We're controlled by fear. We're controlled by worry and anxiety. And so we play it safe. And that's in all areas of life. But the servant here, he plays itself safe and he buries it underground. Instead, the first two servants, they are in what we call the commitment zone. They are full out. They are going for it. They're innovating. They're being entrepreneurial. They're risking it all. They're taking what their master has given it. And that's who we want to be as a church. We want to be a group of people that aren't just sat eating cucumber sandwiches and quiches in our comfortable church. We're people that are radically risking everything, because we're committed to that which God has trusted us with. Yeah. And so last week, we looked at this in the context of money. So good things, the good things that God trusts us with. And if we read the parable literally, it's, you know, the man gives his servants money. And so God gives us good things. He trusts us with money. All of us here, if we're living in Bristol, if we're kind of staying in a nice home, then we have been trusted with extraordinary wealth compared to so much of the world. And so for us, it's a challenge of how are we in the commitment zone with our finances? How do we live a life so that we're not controlled by fear of money, but instead are committed are giving radically to the family here. And we looked at the fact that this should be proportional and it should be personal. Proportional because we want to give more as our salary goes up or whatever, we want to give more because we don't ever want to get to that place where we're so comfortable that we don't rely on God. But also it's personal because this is a matter between ourselves and God. It's not us standing on the stage pointing the finger. It's actually a choice that we make in our hearts. And so it's great to hear people kind of making that step, committing, going for that. And that's something that we want to do together. But tonight, I'm going to look at something even more important than the money we've been trusted with. And that is the good news that we've been trusted with. Because God has trusted us with the good news about who he is. That good news is simple, that he loves us, that he loves you. He loves you no matter where you've come from. He loves you no matter who you are. He loves you no matter what you've done. And that is the amazing news that God has trusted us to tell the world. And I don't know, I guess I don't do that much a lot of the time. And I think because I'm worried that I'll mess it up. I'm worried that I won't have the right answers. I'm worried that when push comes to shove, I just won't do it. And so, yeah, the fear of messing it up can get in the way of me sharing the good news that I've been trusted with. And I'm sure many of us have loads of stories in our lives of when we've messed it up, when we've been trusted with something, when we've got it wrong. And for me, an obvious one I'm thinking about a month ago or so, I was asked to be best man at my friend Dan's wedding. Big day, big responsibility, a lot of trust going into that. So he had trusted me on his biggest day. He'd give me responsibilities, things to do. So I held his hair back while he was sick with nerves in the morning and tied his tie for him. And, you know, I was looking at my watch throughout the day, ferociously checking that we were bang on schedule. I was giving it the old, be upstanding for the bride and groom, and you know, people were amazed at how well I did that. It was astonishing. And then, you know, the time came for my biggest responsibility, the big one. The toasts are coming, and I've got to get 120 champagne glasses from the bar at one end of this teepee. It's not the biggest wedding venue. Everyone's quite crammed in. The bar's at one end. 120 champagne glasses to 120 guests right the way along. And I'm clumsy. So this is where you start to think, Dan, why did you trust me with this? And anyway, I go to the bar and I notice at this point that champagne glasses are really thin. And really tall. It's just a terribly designed glass. Give it a wide base. And so the barman's pouring them onto this really wobbly tray. And I'm determined to do it right. I've been trusted by Dan to do this. And so I pick up the first tray. I turn around. And just as I start to make my way through this obstacle course of tables and wedding guests, a guy from the stag do that I didn't really get on with. Anyway, that's beside the point. Barges into me. Left shoulder goes flying. I'm trying to adjust. So the tray's going this way. There's like four champagne glasses gone that way. So I've overcompensated. I've whipped back around this way. Another five have gone that way. Champagne everywhere. Anyway, I'm left with two glasses stood. The last surviving champagne glasses on my tray. And the other guy has made a run for it. He's run, ducked, covered, tried to get out of the way. So I've tried to style it out by doing like an ironic bow. Needless to say, as I did that, the last two glasses. So we've got 12 smashed champagne glasses. And I go to the bar and I say, can I get 12 more? And he said, no, we bought the exact amount of champagne glasses, which to me is poor management. You've got to be expecting me to drop some. It's just going to happen. Anyway, so we're scrambling around trying to find things that champagne go in. And long story short, I ended up toasting the bride and groom out of a teacup that I had the cream tea from earlier. And, you know, look back on that. And that was a big day I was trusted with. And I messed it up. And it wasn't a huge thing. It was a bit embarrassing. But sometimes that fear of messing it up, that worry that we're going to get it wrong, is what stops us from doing the things that we know we should do. It stops us from sharing the good news about Jesus. We're worried that we'll mess it up, that we'll get it wrong. And I don't know if you're new to church or this isn't something you do that often. Maybe you might think that the Bible is full of perfect people being perfect all of the perfect time. And I'm here to tell you that is not the case. That is just, luckily for me, that is not the case, because there are all of these characters in the Bible that are deeply flawed people that are getting it wrong a lot of the time. And there's one guy I love that makes me feel much better about myself. He's a guy called Peter. And Peter was Jesus' best friend. Peter was one of the disciples, one of that inner close-knit group. And Jesus trusted Peter with a lot. He really did. He trusted him to share the good news about who he was with a lot of people, which is kind of, if you know anything about Peter, he's this lowly fisherman who didn't really seem to catch fish unless a miracle was involved. He was foul-tempered. He had a really bad language. He chopped a guy's ear off with a sword. He actually did that. He chopped a guy's ear off with a sword when he got angry. And then on his big moment, the time when Jesus really needed his trust, when he needed to do that which Jesus trusted him, the night when Jesus was killed, Peter denies him 3 times. And he's accused of knowing Jesus, and he says, "No, I don't know the man. I've never met him. I don't know the man." And so this guy that had been trusted with so much messes it up in such a big way. And yet Jesus dies, and he rises back to life. And then a few days later, he goes and has breakfast with Peter. And he says, "Peter, do you love me? Go feed my sheep." He says, "Peter, do you love me? Go feed my sheep," 3 times, saying, "Peter, I trust you. If you love me, do what I told you to do all along. Even though you've messed it up, go and feed my sheep. Go and tell people about me." He tells Peter that he's the rock upon which he'll build the church. This guy that chops ears off. He tells him, "I trust you to share the good news with the whole world." Now here's the point. God isn't looking for perfect people to share about who he is. He can use champagne droppers and ear choppers just like me and you, which is good news, right? That is good news. We've been trusted with so much, and not just trusted with little things, not just trusted with you know, going to pick up the shopping or whatever. This is big news. This is huge. This is the story that changes the world. This is the idea that God is love, that the whole world needs to know about. He's trusting us with his most precious treasure. This is something that Jesus died for, that we could share with the world. And, you know, when we're trusted with things that are precious, that ratchets the temperature up again, right? I don't know if you've been trusted with something really important, even more important than champagne glasses. I don't know. But when I think of the most precious things that people trust me with, one of them is I live with a young family, and they have a baby. They came home 10 months ago with this newborn baby. And April walks in with baby Hannah, wrapped up in cloth, lying in a manger, looking really, really cute, looking really, really tiny, with tiny hands and tiny feet. And you could tell just the way that April looked at Hannah that this was her whole world. This was the most precious thing she had. This was something she had gone through extreme pain, so I'm told, to look after and to care for. And so it came to time for her to be passed around, and Anna gets a go, and she's holding Hannah, and Anna's great with kids. So it just looks right. You know when someone just looks right holding a baby? It just looks like it makes sense. Everything sort of fits. And then it's passed on to Joe, and Joe gets the bottle out, and she's amazing at feeding Hannah, and you know, she's good with kids as well, so I get that. And then April turns to me and she says, "Sam, would you like to hold the baby?" Now, she knows what I'm like with champagne glasses, right? She knows that I'm clumsy. And as she's coming towards me, as she's bringing this baby kind of airlifted towards me, all I can think of, this baby is alive, and it's really tiny. And it's like April's most precious thing in the whole wide world. And I know for a fact that you're not meant to drop babies. And so when baby Hannah is brought to me, I have to just like wedge my arms under its arm, my hands under its armpits, because I don't really know how to hold a newborn baby. I haven't really done this before. So I'm just sort of holding her like this. just not moving, just looking at it. And baby Hannah's looking back at me like, what is this guy doing? I haven't been here for long, but I know that's not right. But I'm just so terrified. This is April's most precious treasure in the whole world. And I'm looking around thinking, give it back to Anna. Anna knows what she's doing. Give it to Joe. Joe knows exactly how to be. Keep it for yourself, April. It's your baby. This is your most precious thing in the whole world. Just aren't you the best person to look after it? Shouldn't you be the one to care for it? And yet April turns to me, the guy who drops champagne glasses, the guy who doesn't know how to hold a baby, and says, here, take my most prized, precious treasure in the whole world. I'm trusting you with it. And that's what God does with us with his good news. That's what he does with us when he says, I'm trusting you to tell the world about me. He takes the most prized, precious thing he has and puts it into our hands. And I think the disciples that Jesus is telling the story of the parable of the talents to, he's warning them before he's about to die of what they're not to do. That they've got this treasure, this precious treasure about who he is. And he knows that he's about to be killed. And so he's giving them this pre-warning. He's saying, you know, don't do what the religious people do around you. He's saying, don't do what those religious people that make the laws are so tight and constrictive that no one can adhere to them. Don't do what the religious people do where they make it such an elitist thing that this good news that was meant to be for everyone is suddenly shrunk down and down and down until it might as well be buried underground. Jesus is telling his disciples, don't be like those religious people. Don't bury the good news about who I am. Tell the world. Hold it openly. Tell everyone you meet about me. Don't bury this underground. And so he tells his story. Then he's killed, he's murdered. He rises again, defeats death, gives us life over death. And then once he's kind of back around walking, talking to his disciples, he takes them for his final sermon, his final address, up to the top of a mountain. He takes this group of people and they go up a mountain. And this is where Matthew leaves us at the very end of his gospel. And we're going to read from Matthew 28. And it says this, it says, then the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. When they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted. Then Jesus came to them and said, all authority on heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you to the very end of the age. And the cool thing about this passage is when we're talking about the series of trusted, what it means that God trusts us, Jesus kind of gives us a bit of that here. When he says, all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me, he's saying, I can be trusted. He's saying, I've got it. I'm the big man. I know what I'm doing. God has trusted me with all authority in heaven and earth. You can trust me. And so if I'm a disciple sat here, I'm thinking, yes, Jesus is going to do it. I get to sit back and watch while Jesus goes and tells the world about him. Yes, I get a front row seat to watch Jesus do it. And then Jesus, as we've seen throughout this series, he flips it. And he says, therefore, go and make disciples of all the nations. He says, you can trust me, but I trust you. Go and make disciples of all the nations. Tell everyone about me. And that's a pretty daunting thing to be told, to go and make disciples of all the nations, especially when it's Jesus telling you. But luckily, there's a few things in here that we can really be encouraged by, I think. And if we go back to the slide before, here we see this weird little sentence. It says, when they saw him, when they saw Jesus, they're on top of a mountain, Jesus, risen God, you know, they worshipped him, which sounds about right, but some doubted. And I'm thinking, if I'm Matthew is writing the book about God's life on earth. He is writing this book, and this is his great crescendo. This is the moment that he's been building up to, his final chapter, the final address, the words he'll say that will leave a mark on the world. I wouldn't have said about the bit about some doubting. I just wouldn't have done it. I just think it might have been cleaner. It might have been a better visual image if we just had everyone worshipping. Everyone saw the Son of God was there and everyone worshipped. And yet for some reason, Matthew includes the fact that some people doubted. But actually, for me, that's an encouragement. Because sometimes I doubt. Sometimes I hesitate. Sometimes I take a step back. And maybe for you, if you've been here throughout the series, maybe you've been sat every Sunday thinking, yeah, I want to be trusted. I want to step forward. I want to get into the commitment zone. But you're sort of doubting. You're sort of hesitating. You're sort of stepping back. The good news for us is that Jesus has already factored it in. Jesus wrote it in the book to know that if you've doubted, you're still part of it. He didn't take those who doubted and say, you guys, back down the mountain. You doubted, so yeah, off you go. You can walk back on your own. He didn't send them off, and he didn't like take the elite worshippers, those that were bowed face down, those that were singing in harmonies, and take them off to tell them the good news. He took the ones who had doubted. He took the ones that worshipped. He took everyone that was there with him and said, I trust you. Now go and make disciples of all the nations. So if you're here tonight and you're thinking, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I can do it. I'm not even sure what I think. Know that Jesus includes you and that as a church, we're all in this together. That wherever we're from, whatever part of our journey with Jesus that we're on, we're all in this together. And it's not a case of the super spiritual ones charging ahead. It's the case of us all going together. The second thing that I find really encouraging in this passage is if we go to the bit that I read before, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. The thing I like about this is that it reminds me that I'm on Jesus' team. And I think that's a good team to be on. That if I'm on Jesus' team, that's good because he's the guy for whom all authority in heaven and on earth has been given. That he is the big man. He's the guy that I want to be stood beside when the going gets tough. He is the one that everything in heaven and here on earth obeys. And I think what I've loved about these Between Friends series that we've been doing, the three interviews we've had at the start, is that we've had Rosie and Beth and Andy and Jamie and Steve and Mark, and they've just been talking about how they shared faith and how they found faith. And it's kind of reminded me that, to be honest with you, I'll let you guys in on a secret, as it's just us. Those guys aren't super Christians. They're not the ones that have, like, they're lovely people. And thanks so much, Jamie and Andy, for tonight. That was amazing. But they're not like the elite ones that are like so far ahead of everyone else. They're just like me and you. They're just exactly the same as me and you. They're just ordinary people just trying to tell people about Jesus. And the thing that's so incredible is you can see the power of God shining through them. You can see that God, who has authority in heaven and earth, is shining through them. I really liked last week, if you weren't here, Beth was telling the story about how she started talking about God to Rosie. And it was in Embargo's toilets on a night out, which is a really high quality evangelism spot, guys, I have to say. And, you know, I'm imagining Rosie probably was slurring her words. I don't know. I don't want to presume. But and I'm imagining Beth was doing the same. And yet, in the midst of all of that, Beth was like, it was amazing. God used me. God used me to bring Rosie to church. God used me to show Rosie that she's loved. And I love hearing stories like that because it reminds me that it's not about how good I am. I can't preach like Philip. I can't pray like Rob Scott Cook. I can't look after people like Kate can. But I can be me. And I can know that I'm on God's team and that his power and his authority is with me. Paul describes it like jars of clay. He writes to a church and he's saying, guys, you're like jars of clay, these fragile, precious things that have got cracks in and that they're a little bit bruised, they're a little bit fragile, they're a little bit worse for wear. But actually, it's not about how strong, how powerful, how beautiful the outside is. It's what's inside that counts. It's the power of God inside of us. And actually, when we're cracked, when we're a little bit broken, just like Andy was talking about today, that actually when we have our flaws, when we have our struggles, when we have those things that we've got to be vulnerable with, God shines even more through that. And so it gives me so much encouragement when I think about being trusted with the good news of who Jesus is. That it's not about me. It's about Jesus and the fact that he has all authority on heaven and on earth. And then finally, he finishes the end of the book of Matthew with the sentence, "And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age." I am with you always. And this is, I guess, different from the story of the talents, the parable of the talents, where the master gives them something, then he goes away for a while, and then he comes back. Actually, with Jesus, we get the promise that he never leaves us, that he is always with us. He promises us, "I will be with you always to the very end of the age." And Matthew starts his book right at the very start of this book, in Matthew 1, chapter 23. He says that Jesus will be known as Emmanuel, which means God with us. That Jesus, who is God with us at the end of his time on earth, the last sentence that Matthew recorded says, "I will be with you always." And so if you're feeling like it's a bit of a lone journey, like it's you're talking to your colleague at work and it's just you and him and it's really awkward, actually know that you're not there alone, that you're going with Jesus, that in the highs and lows, the times when we're vulnerable, the times when we don't have the answers, the times when we get shut down, the times when we're feeling weak, we're not alone. That Jesus says, "When you go, when you step out, I go with you." In fact, he says, "I go before you." And so I guess we have the challenge for us of what does that mean for us today? If this was 2,000 years ago, and it still is true for us now as then, what do we do with it? And I think Philip kind of mentioned a few amazing things that we can get on board with. So if you're someone who's part of this church or wants to bring people back, then we'd really love you to do that next Sunday. What's the point? Bring your mum, bring your nan, bring your cat, bring your next door neighbour, bring your personal trainer, whoever. Bring them along for what's the point? Because it's going to be amazing. Then we've got Five Reasons Why. We've got Alpha on the 10th. We've got an Alpha launch before that, a party with a DJ, food, all that sort of stuff the week before, and that's a great thing to invite people along to. Maybe you're someone who's been invited here tonight by friends, and you're thinking, "Well, this is strange. This isn't like the church I thought it would be. It's not in a church. It's in We the Curious." And just to know, like, I don't know if you were tricked if they lay sweets out in a row until the door of We the Curious, or they said that Philip would be preaching and you knew Philip's a good preacher and then you saw me get up and your poor friend has been sat there nervously for the last half hour thinking, "Is this guy a heretic?" But I hope not. Just know that if you've been bought by a friend, it's probably because they really think you're great and they really want you to find the joy and happiness and the love of God. Because we believe what we say, we're not just making this up, that we believe that God is love. We believe that he loves all of us, no matter where we've come from, no matter where we've been, no matter who we are. And then we believe that Jesus died, he came, God became man, he died on a cross and rose again so that we could live closely with God, so that we could have a relationship with him, and so that we could live with freedom, with joy, with the fullness of life. And so that's why you've been bought tonight, probably, is because your friend thinks, "This is great, and I want my friend to have that same experience." So thank you so much for coming. I know this is a peek behind the curtain for you guys, kind of, "Oh, this is what they do at church." But we don't always talk about you guys like this. But anyway, so if you're thinking, "What can I do now?" That's a great thing, to invite friends along. Invite friends along to something. Tell them about Jesus. If that's a step too far, maybe just share the video, the teaser that we put up there, a video of a sermon, and maybe a better one than this, and share it around. Maybe the easiest thing for you to do, and the most important thing for you to do, is to be praying for your friends, to be praying for them all the time, that they would know the love of God. And I guess I'll finish by talking about why this matters for me, why I'm delighted to be talking about this today. And really, it's because when we talk about being trusted with the good news, I feel like in my life I've been trusted with the good news and I haven't always got it right. I feel like there's been quite a few times when I've messed it up. And there's one in particular for loads of you guys are starting uni right now. And I finished uni a year and a half ago, and I went through my whole uni life living with the same people, living with the same friends. And they didn't go to church, they weren't Christians, but we shared life together. We kind of knew everything about each other. And I knew that they needed Jesus. I knew that I wanted them to come to church, but there was something in me that was just so stuck in that comfort zone, that was just so happy to trot off to church on a Sunday and a Tuesday evening and then come back. Maybe it was fear of what they would think. Maybe it was just me being too comfortable. That actually, I look back and over like the 3 years I lived with them, I think I invited them to church 5 times, and 3 of those were carol services. So does, you know. And I don't know, I look back on it and I think, wow, God, you trusted me with so much in that time. And I remember the time when I realised that they weren't going to be living in Bristol for much longer. They were going back to hometowns, moving to London. And I suddenly had a realisation. It was like in the story when the master comes back to the servant and the servant realises, I've messed this up. I had a realisation when that happened that, God, you've trusted me not only with this amazing news that you love my friends, but you've also trusted me with these friends. You've also trusted me with these people that I share my life with. And I realized that he had trusted me, and I was so stuck in my comfort that I had buried my treasure underground. And I just don't want that for myself anymore. I don't want that for you guys. I don't want to go through life thinking what could have been if only I'd stepped out of the comfort zone, been committed, if only I'd gone for it a little bit more, if only I'd known that God really trusts me. And so tonight, that's my encouragement for you guys. That God is with us, that his power is in us, that we have been trusted with this amazing news, this life-transforming, history-shaking, world-changing news. And let's use it. Let's go out and let's tell our friends all about the love of God. So I'm going to pray for us. And just as I do that, there's going to be people coming around with some cards. And we've got these cards. And on the back, it's just got 2 ways in which you can kind of commit to committing. So it could be that you're committing with the stuff we talked about last week, to investing in this family here. And that's a chance for you just to write down, yeah, I want to commit to investing in this community with this amount. And below that, there's the opportunity to invite. And again, we believe that all of us have been given people that God has trusted us with. And so you can write down the name of the person that you're going to invite along that you want to bring to hear the good news of Jesus. And so they're coming around. I'm going to pray for us, and then we're going to go back into worship. God, I thank you so much that you trust us with so much. That even though we get it wrong, even though we mess it up, even though we're not perfect, that you still look to us and say, these are the people that I'm going to change the world with. These are my people who are going to transform Bristol. I thank you that you trust us with that. I pray this week especially that we would know you with us, to step out from the places where we're comfortable into the places where we're committed to you. And God, I pray that we would look back on this time at Metro, as a time when we saw so many of our friends come to hear the good news of Jesus because you used us. In Jesus' name, amen.